welcome to Sheep Stuff You Should Know, live and in person.
At a bull sale.
At a bull sale with Dan Macon, Ryan Mahoney, and we even got a crowd section here with Justin Davis.
Yes, yes, yeah. the cheering section.
Yeah, he might make an appearance, he might not.
Yeah.
You never know.
We'll hand off the microphone, make him talk.
Yeah. What's up, Dan?
It's fall. Fall in California, man.
Yeah,
or at least in Northern California.
Normally, the sale's like 130 degrees in these foothills, and all the everything's hot.
And there's no feed left anywhere, and just.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
God, it's nice.
All I see is fire hazard and green ponds.
Not this year.
It's pretty nice.
This year, it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Pretty nice.
How's Auburn?
Auburn's really nice. We
kind
had
the same.
A little shot of rain over the. We are early.
We got
this
rain
week.
Scheduled on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Connor's got a football game too.
We might, football in the rain is
yeah,
the best.
Yeah, he might actually get a little rain.
It is the best.
Oh man. He's been waiting for that for a year and a half.
First game?
This is his fourth this season.
But first rain game?
Probably the first real rain game.
Nice.
Yeah, I think he had a sprinkle before and that doesn't count.
Oh, you gotta go home with a muddy uniform.
Oh, the mud bowls are the best.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, when you slide at the end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, even if you don't get in the game,
you can look like
you played.
You know when the groundskeepers are furious, you had a fun time.
You had a good game.
Yeah.
That's right.
I always liked that. When, like my dad, he was a football coach, and he was always really passionate about the holiness of the football field, the sacred space, and taking care of the proper grass and everything. He even made us like lay out sod one year when we were there, and I always loved when he was just like pulling his hair out. And we have this right after I got out of high school, me and a bunch of my buddies, we'd have a Martin Luther King Jr. mud football game.
Oh, yeah.
Mud football game. And every time I'd come back, I'd be covered in mud. My dad, I'd be like, oh, it was so much fun. We had all this. He'd be like,
What field?
Where'd you play? Oh, just some field in town. I city park. Oh, no, that was right in the football field.
Yeah. I was in high school long before the... Oh, we've got a gate emergency going on here.
Yeah.
I was in high school long before the advent of turf fields at the high school level. So by about middle of October, if we'd had any weather at all, like between the hash marks was no grass at all. It's just gravel.
Yeah.
Really pleasant to get tackled
the
on.
The gravel's fun, yeah, when you can get into the gravel. Although I played on turf when I was in college. We had our home field was like the old school turf, which was like concrete with a little pad of grass on it.
With plastic grass.
Oh my gosh, that hurt my knees and ankles and everything. It was so bad. And you play in tennis shoes, which is really weird.
Oh yeah, I'll bet.
You have like turf shoes, which is just kind of like grippy tennis shoes. And then I remember I got to play on the new style turf up at Puget Sound, University of Puget Sound. And that was like the new, like the little chunked up tires.
Yeah.
And I got out there and I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. I love this turf. And then when we were done playing the game, I had those little...
Dump all those pellets.
Yeah, I had those little pellets absolutely everywhere. And it was the worst experience of my life. It was terrible. It was horrible.
That's the soccer fields that the girls played on.
Yeah. So give me some mud. I'll be happy.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Speaking of mud, you guys started a lamb, right?
Yeah.
And no mud yet.
Well, there's a few mud piles by some of the leaky water troughs, but outside of that, we're pretty good.
How
we got
early?
Most of those fixed.
Just like a week before you thought you'd start?
Well, we recorded September 30th last year, and I think I had a few hundred lambs already on the ground because I just re-listened to that. So it's actually timed up with last year pretty good.
Yep.
I'm really impressed at, because last year we had an extremely good flush, extremely good feed. That last year's lambing, so it'd be 2 years ago. And I thought a lot of it was just that, but our breed up this year, it is a little more spread out from the preg scan, but it's still super compact. I think we ended up like 93% bred the lamb in the first month, and we sheared like May 10th, we sheared half the ewes right in the middle of turnout.
Yeah.
And so to breed up that good, I was all excited, thought it was going to work great where we'd spread out these ewes, but no.
Wrong.
Oh, the good Lord had better plans for me.
How will that work out in the barn with all those lambs hitting the ground at once?
It's going to be fun. A lot of organization. I think the biggest struggle is going to be moving them all to the alfalfa so quick and making sure we got bunches and materials.
Right.
I bought stuff for a new field this year. So, you know, I have an additional bunch I can run up there if we need to.
What?
I bought my first set of woven electric net, too.
Whoa.
Yeah, big deal.
Whoa. You know how to set it up yet?
Nah, we're just going to let them go out there and figure it out.
You know you have to electrify it?
I heard about that. I'll try.
You know, you might talk to some of these goat guys and
yeah,
get a few lessons.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is I got my wool sheep, so they're more afraid of the fence than the other way around. Now, we're going to use it because we always use a woven wire for our little pens when we receive.
Yeah.
And I told them we're going to try and use that electric fence the first time, and then whatever's easiest for them, that's what we'll do going forward.
Yeah.
So that'll be nice. And then we also bought it just because we get coyotes every once. There's so many trees over there now.
Yep.
That we have coyotes that'll get into a bunch, and we're just going to go, if we hit that problem, then we're just going to switch from the three wire to the
woven wire
in that one spot.
Cool.
Try not to do it everywhere because it is a lot of walking and
it's a lot of setup.
Yeah, a lot of setup. But you know, rolling a 70-pound roll of a wire fence and pounding in 150 T-posts, a lot of work too. So,
and your guys will get efficient at it. They'll figure it out and get efficient at it.
Yeah. So. I showed them how to like pick it up and leave it hanging, just like you taught us at the field day
year,
2 years ago.
You took notes.
Yeah, and hold it like behind your back and like drop it off your fingers and stuff. We'll see if they remember.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That'll be very cool.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So we're moving. It's good. Also, I think what we're going to do this year, I was talking to Justin about this last week and then now again today, but we're going to do a incentive program for making bummers. So like however many orphan lambs they make, we're going to take like 10% of the end value because we've contracted a lot of our lambs, not all of them, but a good chunk of them. So we have an expected value. And we're going to take 10% and then we're going to split it among all the employees.
Oh, cool.
So that will be like the incentive to prioritize that job.
That's very cool.
Yeah, we'll see if it works. So, because that's a big problem is like you'll have one guy that gets really good at it and does it every day.
Right.
And then he takes a day off. And then
and it
the milk just falls apart. Yeah, the milk gets mixed weird. Something happens and then everything's sick. And then you lose 30 pounds.
Yep.
So, we're going to really work at that a little bit. But
that's
I'm kind of excited about that idea.
That's a great idea.
Be a fun incentive. Yeah. Well, I told like Jesus, he was kind of excited, but kind of, I don't know, suspicious. So we'll see. But yeah, so anyway, that's gonna be fun.
Are you calving now too, or does that come a little later?
Calving started August.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cows September.
Yeah. Okay. Heifers in August and cows in September, and this year we AI'd to that some fancy bull SAV rainfall out of South Dakota, out of Chavalier. The nice one, the really fancy one that all the sons are selling for big money in these bull sales here.
Yeah.
And anyway, we AI'd to them. And so we have those calves are really nice. I mean, it's amazing how good quality genetics paired right can really make for a good calving. And those calves got good vigor and they jump up quick and they don't walk very fast because they're young. But outside of that, they're pretty fancy.
So we're at the Bruin Ranch bull sale today.
Yeah.
How long
the
ago?
The Beef Solutions.
That's right. The Beef
sale.
Solutions bull
Fall
sale.
Fall Roundup.
I own California.
Yeah.
I own close to Jackson.
Yeah. And this is the Bruin Ranch is managed by Joe Fisher, who is world fame due to his Angus Underground podcast, which he's invited me on multiple times, but never given me a date. So I think he invites me just to make me feel good to then get me to come to his bull sale and spend $40,000 on bulls.
I think it's all a ploy to make sheep guys feel better.
I'm starting to realize this here. It's taken me a few years of getting buttered up, but I
think there's probably a law somewhere that a sheep guy can't go on an Angus podcast.
I know. I'm trying to kick down that wall. Just, sometimes some barriers just can't be broken.
Your day will come.
I hope so.
Your day will come.
I hope so.
How long ago did you start doing your homework on the bulls that you bought today?
That's a good question,
Justin.
When did
homework?
You start, you think?
I started about a month ago, focusing on the catalog, looking at EPDs, figuring out which ones I like. But eventually I won't know till I get to sale day and actually look at the bulls in person, because that's the main drive for me.
And what are you looking for just when you're seeing them here for the first time? What crosses a bull off your list that look good on paper?
First thing, I look at structure. That's my main thing. I need to make sure they can cover all the cows and feel comfortable and longevity of the bull, too. Then width, muscle, shape, and just profile look.
They got to look like a bull, right?
They got to look like a bull.
Yeah, yeah. So we were talking a little bit coming into the sale today about the difference in bull sales and ram sales, and numbers is a big difference, right?
Numbers and information on individual animals.
Yeah.
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 Huge difference. And it's regional, though, because you go to some Katahdin associations, will have be more reflective of a regular Angus bull sale. Your Targhee sales up in kind of the mountain Midwest there. I don't know if that's a real term.
I might have
offended the mountains
it's
Midwest.
It's a new region.
You know.
Those of you in Iowa.
Not Iowa. Yeah, but yeah, because the Targhees are Montana, Wyoming, like that country there.
Yeah.
They got a lot of numbers. NSIP, wherever an NSIP is big, you got some good data. But, you know, the Western range type sales, it's just not there. Even California Ram Sale, they have the range index and some of that stuff, but it's based off of such kind of phenotypic and simple numbers that it doesn't necessarily translate into hard numbers. It's a good differentiation, but it doesn't carry
as much.
It tells
you where that ram is, but doesn't really tell you much about
it. Doesn't carry a lot
potential.
Of weight. Like a lot of times the biggest loin eye score is going to be a smaller, younger animal with a big loin eye. And
right.
That loin eye is big for its body, but it's also just the smallest, youngest animal there.
Yep.
And so just proportionately wise, it just hit that mark on that day. When it grows out another 6 months, is it going to be the same? Probably not.
Who knows? Yeah.
So you just kind of, I don't know. I probably got in trouble by half the industry for saying that, but.
Well, we've already gotten in trouble with the other half. So
yeah,
then,
we barely record anymore, so what the heck?
Yeah, so exactly.
Give people something to talk about for a little bit.
Exactly.
Between episodes.
We'll share Ryan's email after this.
Yeah.
Maybe his cell phone number, actually.
Yeah, even better. Even better.
So have you ever bought a bull that looked good when you saw it, looked good on paper, and its calves just didn't measure up? Does that ever happen based on kind of where the cattle industry is and those predictive numbers now?
It could sure happen. I personally haven't seen it yet. I haven't been in the industry long enough.
And you got
you
good
kinda,
calves
you
too,
kinda
right?
Spurred a good thought in my mind. So, you know, you go through these bull sales and the catalogs and you look at all these numbers and you come to the sales, you look at the animals, you size them up, you look at them, and you're like, I think these are pretty good. And then you go and you buy them and you spend too much money or more than your budget, or maybe you didn't spend it and you come out of there feeling like, gosh darn it, we just nailed it today. You know, I came right within my average. I got these good bulls. I don't know if I've ever gotten home and looked at the bulls and been like, oh, that was a terrible buy. Once they hit the herd, a lot of times we don't even look at them.
Right.
Like, you know, and I don't know if that's just a mental thing or or what. I mean, there is some, like, I have seen, like, as we've bought in some bulls, you'll see some traits kind of stick out in those animals as they live.
You have,
like,
more of their offspring.
There was that, there's that one, the one company, we got two of them now. We culled one because the feet blew up on them.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the same deal, and both of them had those same problems. One of them has, like, a weird rib thing, and they're all from kind of the same place.
Yeah.
I don't want to say the name because I'm talking bad about them. Yeah. But, but you know, there is kind of some of that, but they've also been in our program for, like, 5 years. So they should be breaking down now. So it's not necessarily the producer.
Right.
I think another part is how you manage them in their off season.
That's huge.
Make sure they have the right nutrition and getting ready to breed up the next year.
I think that's true of rams and bulls both, right?
That's 100%.
Out of sight, out of mind a lot of times, and you don't even think about them.
And the flip side of that is these bulls are getting meticulously cared for all the way up to sale day. And, you know, you have some that go to feedlots and blow them up. You have others that do grass and keep condition. Like, you have difference in condition.
Different approaches, yeah.
But a lot of places, they'll take them out of that environment, throw them on their dry bull pasture, and then pull them back in, you know, 3 months later when they're ready to breed. What happened to that one?
Fell apart.
Well, you never looked at it. You never gave it any supplement. Maybe the feed was bad. Maybe, you know, you didn't feed them enough. And with rams, that happens a lot, especially the really hard run desert rams.
Yep.
They fall back from the bunch, and then they just don't get that attention.
And even at a small scale like us, we had somebody that wanted to take our rams every summer just to kind of keep some fire danger down, and as a consequence, I didn't go see them every day, and there were times they weren't ready to go in with the ewes.
This year we pulled our rams and we went through them all and took our coals out, and then we put them out on, we have two fields, and the feed got short, and we brought them in, and because they started to get a little sick, and sure enough, they just ran out of groceries.
Yeah.
And so we had to move them, start feeding them a little bit, give them a little protein, but that definitely happens a lot, and so it's nice because you buy one animal, you can just blame the person who supplied it as for why it fell apart. But 90% of its lifespan after you buy it is your fault.
It's your fault. Exactly. Right?
Like you gotta take care of that thing. Vaccinate it, deworm it, like all that kind of stuff.
Well, that's another question, I think, for both bulls and rams. And I know that on the ram side of things, there are... it's possible to buy rams that have never really had to work a day in their life, and they go out in big range country and can't keep up. How important is it in your mind to look at the program as well as the individual animal?
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about this at lunch. Really, really good lunch.
Yes, a tremendous lunch.
Tremendous prime
rib. Best prime rib
lunch
I've ever had,
yes,
I think.
Yes, yes. And you're not required to buy a bull to have the lunch.
I bought no bulls and I ate lunch.
Yeah, so that's a good program. But anyway.
I lost Joe money.
you made it back from me. So yeah, the auctioneer got a little speedy and took it away. But the... we were talking at lunch, though. I think that gets back to my thing about, like, you go and you look at all these bulls specifically and you buy your favorites and then you put them out on your pasture. Well, if you're buying from a program, that program has goals and objectives. I heard it one time. I went to lunch at Cindy's restaurant in Davis, and it's also the nightlife is like some Thai cuisine place, and it's a Taiwanese guy that runs it. And I remember one time, like, I can't remember who I was with or whether I said it. They're like, is your pineapple burger, is it any good? And he looked at me and he said, if it's no good, I don't put it on your menu. And I was like, you know what? There's a lot of truth to that. Like, who's going to take a dish and like be like, this tastes horrible.
Right.
I'm going to put it as a number 7 just to mess with people.
I got to move this stuff.
Yeah, well, it's the same with, like, these producers of these bulls. Like, they're not going to. They don't want to sell garbage.
Yep.
And so if you like the program, and we believe big on looking at the cows.
Yep.
And so a lot of our research is getting to know an operation before sale day. So Justin's been through Joe's cows multiple times. I've been through them multiple times.
Yep.
We talk about breeding objectives, what he's doing, different program stuff. When we're making AI decisions, we talk to him about it. One, to get advice on what we're doing, but then also just like, what's he thinking? What's his goals?
Just fitting where things are headed.
Yeah, and it's the same with some of these other places we bought from. You look at those cows, and then that way, when you go to that sale, you can literally buy any bull in the sale and probably be pretty happy with it.
Right.
You know, there's going to be little differences. You know, the walk on this one bull doesn't look so good. This one's kind of an outlier where its legs are a little too spread out, or this one empties out in the back end, and you have some of that stuff, but... generally, you know, whatever you buy out of this sale is going to be his program cattle. Whatever you buy out of Tehama is going to be Tehama.
It's going to be that
program, you know, whatever you buy out of wherever, like, it's their program.
And they're in their philosophy. You're buying their philosophy on
especially
how cows fit the environment.
Now, there are a lot of bull sales that do the embryo transfers and the AI and all that stuff, and they're just running carrier, you know, they're basically breeding bulls out of dairy cows. And that's a little different, and that's why you need to get to know the cows.
Right.
Right. So if you want to buy from a program like that, go ahead.
But
know what you're doing.
Know what the female side is.
Yeah, know the female side, because that's half the program.
So flipping back to rams, I mean, it's not...
Rams, that's your only option.
Right. So you don't do any homework on them, right? But you get to know... The people you're getting them from.
Justin just got back from Cunningham. He went up and met Glenn and looked at the ewes. Did you see the ewes? He was busy, I know. But you saw all the rams. So.
Yeah.
But you see the range, see the outfit, talk to him a little bit about what he's thinking. And it helps both ways because, it helps him understand what we're thinking. But then we kind of see what he's doing, what he's working on. And, you get to know the operation.
Are those all whiteface?
It's all Rambler, yeah. They're a Rambouillet. They used to show and win lots of awards, and now they sell just commercial rams. I don't know if they do shows anymore, but It's a range ram, and it's a non-typical Rambouillet range ram. A lot of the Rambouillets will be heavily merino influenced, yeah, like Rafter 7,
right,
or Jewel. And those ones have a lot less length in them. So right, these are taller and longer. So you see ewes that are really tall and long but maintain a fine wool clip, like 80% of the time that's from a Cunningham. So
they're kind, yeah, of a maternal.
Sometimes they can be mistaken for like a kind of those Columbia Cross,
yeah, right,
range ewes.
Because they're so big.
Because they're so big. But they maintain that fineness of wool, and that's where they really shine and set apart from a lot of other operations.
Do you look at wool clip? Do you try to look at wool on the rams too?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, wool is such a small percentage of the income,
right?
But it is income, and I'm a big believer that if you, everybody can sell garbage when people just need protein or need,
right,
wool or need something, but when the market turns, only the premium stuff sells. Only the,
right,
good stuff sells.
Right.
And so, and being able to sell something is worth way more than the highest dollar on the sale day.
Right.
And so, like, I learned that, I don't know, 10 years ago when the lamb market turned and there was a bunch of lambs on feed that we owned and we just flat couldn't get a kill date.
Like, right,
that kill, right, date's worth more than 10 cents a pound.
Right.
A lot of times.
Right.
So,
because they got to move.
Yeah, and you're able to actually turn it into cash. I mean, 10% interest rate's no joke.
Yeah.
That's $100,000 is, I think it's 20 bucks a day.
Yeah.
22 bucks a day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's real, that's a lot of money.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's, my understanding is that there's more of a data-driven opportunity in Australia.
Definitely.
On the sheep side of things, and that's an area where we're way behind the eight ball.
Yeah,
like.
But I mean that stuff. Yes, we're behind the eight ball, but it's so easy to catch up on that stuff,
yeah,
because,
right,
technology is so available. It's so,
right.
The problem with sheep is we're so crossbred,
right,
that it's hard to get, like, you know,
hard to get bred.
Yeah,
through.
You got Suffolk rams with Suffolk numbers, and then you run a gene panel and it comes back something else,
yeah,
and you're like, oh man. So it's hard with that, and that's where NSIP struggles to really capture all the industry.
Yeah.
But I mean, they've made big headways on a lot of the Midwest breeds, and the Targhee breeds really embraced them and done a lot of really good work on that. And so,
and I
and there's been some Rambouillet breeders and stuff more towards the Mid Mountain West.
What part of the country is the Mid Mountain West?
I'm just making things up, man. Just, you know me well enough.
How about have you ever had rams? Same question I asked on the bulls. Have you ever had rams that you brought in that you thought were going to fit good and there was something not quite right?
Yeah, typically it's having to get them culled out for epididymitis or some,
right,
kind of like problem on the,
right,
testicles. That develops so quickly. It's,
right,
not necessarily on the producer.
Right.
But you have higher incidences with some places, or we've had issues.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's not, that's kind of our problem in sourcing. This is way before you started. We had one time we bought a bunch of rams and they came in and we ended up, yeah, going through them, and there was like 2/3 of them.
Oh wow.
Had problems.
Wow.
And I mean, that's a pretty major issue.
Yeah.
And but then once again, like, as a producer, once you buy that ram, you have to take care of it.
Right.
You have to maintain it. You have to, you know, a lot of guys palpate once a year. We palpate like twice a year.
Yeah, right.
Before and after turnout. And that helps
catch
decrease
anything.
Incidences a lot. And
yep.
I mean, it's really important. And our fertility has really increased substantially since we started really focusing on some of that
because
stuff.
Of paying attention to those details.
Yeah, I mean, I like to look back and say when we started feeding high quality test hay at lambing, plus paying attention to our rams, being intentional about the rams, and then working in a flushing cycle, those four things,
yeah,
like an intentional flushing, weaning early, all those things took our lambing percentage and or our breed up specifically, but lambing percentage,
yeah,
is what went up with it. And that lamb's born per use exposed. And that was, you know, those decisions all kind of happened in the same 12-month span, 18-month span. And so it's hard to say this one did that.
They
all moved us in the right direction.
I think we talked about the last recording we did that we moved up our breeding.
Yeah,
this year,
yeah.
Kind of by mistake last year. But
yeah.
I think we've had kind of the same combination of factors, paying more attention to the Rams, really focusing on flushing, which where we are is tough. We don't have we gotta add feed to their flushing ration, but paying attention to that, getting a body condition score on them in the space of a month.
I love that.
Makes a huge difference.
Dr. Richard Einhart from Michigan. I really liked his point about increasing plane of nutrition at flushing. It doesn't necessarily mean good condition. It's about increasing that plane of nutrition.
They're going, they're on an upward.
Like little bit of feed, just you don't have to be on the best of feed going into flushing. Oftentimes it's okay being down in condition, coming right off a wean, and then just supplementing a little bit. Like even just a cheap grass hay sometimes could increase that plane of nutrition.
Yep, a little and energy, a little protein.
And it doesn't have to be a lot.
Yep. So, how many days will lambing last?
I don't know. It's too early to
have, March or
have
something
the end
like
date.
That?
I don't know when the end date is. No, we should end January 1.
Okay.
We left our rams in 15 days later than normal. Normally, we end December 15th to try to be done by Christmas.
Yeah.
But because I thought we were going to be more spread out, I wanted to make sure we had the use covered.
Caught those late cycles, yeah.
And we didn't like. And then the other part of that too is when we sheared late, because what's the cycle on a U? 20 days, something like that?
17, 18 days.
Yeah, so 18 days on a cycle. So if we sheared the 15th and then they lost that lamb, we wanted to make sure that she had at least another 1 to 2 cycles to catch again.
To catch up.
If she left the lamb because of stress, because of the activity at lamb. I don't know if I should say stress.
But yeah, just that first 21 days of pregnancy is,
and it's so
critical.
Small and sensitive, and you never know if it happens. So I wanted to make sure we were covered, but
you were.
Yeah, we were fine. And even our opens that we scanned open, those were like 60% bred up. So we ended up with like a 96% breed up, right? Was that the number?
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. It was insane.
That's tremendous.
Yeah. I was expecting to sell like 4 loads of coal use. I don't even have one. Yeah.
Oh, shucks.
It's great.
Gee, I feel bad that you couldn't put more loads together. That's,
well, you know,
awful.
Because you're going to come down and move to the lambing camp with your new trailer, and you're going to supplement some free labor for
it. I am. I'm going to take all your bottle lambs back with me.
A 10% premium.
Only so I can bring my bottle lambs to your guys in February.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah.
And what else is going on in Rio Vista? It's
gosh, I don't know. Traffic's terrible, but a big power outage.
We hear there's a big power outage.
Yeah,
bridges out.
But yeah, no, I don't know. It's good. But what about you? Got you your Rams, because you got like 3 different breeds that you kind of play with, right? 2 or 3. The Blue Faced Leicester, which the mule, which is a cross between two, and then you got the Shropshire, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And this year, it's just all a mix with everything, all the chaos going on for us right now. They just got all thrown in together, and we'll get what we get.
But that works.
They're all good sheep, so.
Well, you were showing me there that sometimes you keep a little buck lamb in, and you'll end up with a good little lamb crop. One ram can breed 80 pretty easy, huh?
Pretty apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently, 1 5-month-old ram.
Yeah. That's pretty wild.
I was a little more cautious about sorting my feeders out this year.
Yeah.
When I brought the lambs back to the ewes.
Yeah.
So if I have lambs in December,
you'll know
that I missed one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty obvious when it happens. Yeah. No, we're good. I mean, it's just lambing. We got a lot of ewes this year. We bought some ewes from a guy down south, and so we have a lot of sheep. But we're prepped up. We had like 50 born yesterday, which was a big drop. Today, I think it was less. We'll get back and find out. I'm here, so I have no idea.
You have no idea.
Yeah, it was lighter in the morning. It was only a few.
You usually get kind of a big wave about
typically
2.5 weeks in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Before last year, it would always kind of trickle till about between the 10th and the 15th, and then just drop all of a sudden one day.
Yeah.
But last year, we started around the 26th, 25th, and it just never stopped.
Wow.
It just kept going.
I think that's got to be part nutrition, too, don't you?
Well, that's what I was thinking, was it was just nutritional because that was such a good feed year. This year was much worse because it was really cold.
Yeah.
And we didn't get good growth, and then at the end, it just jumped.
Just popped.
And it got really good, and it was a lot of grasses. Last year was all burr clover.
Right.
This year, it's all grasses. The wool's super clean. no burrs. Last year they were loaded with burrs.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some. I got some scratches on my arms from bagging out some ewes yesterday or the other day. But yeah, I was really impressed with the. I'm surprised that it's dropping. It'll be interesting to see. I kind of think it's going to probably tail down a little bit and then pick up around the 15th.
Yeah.
Because even Bravos, when he was preg scanning, he said it seems like they were a little more spread out.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah.
Every year's different.
Every year's a little different.
Little shift in that.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. It'll be interesting to see because I remember last year about the 20th of October talking to Jason Bravos in our Lambin barn, just completely exhausted, wondering what in the heck was I thinking. And I also remember last year, week before Thanksgiving, thinking how amazingly glorious it was that everything was marked and done before Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And we were able to actually brand cattle.
Yes. Yes.
So
yes.
It was, you know, I got kind of both in my head right now. And, it'll be interesting to see. Cause if the lambing is consistent, that means we need to really seriously consider staggering our turnouts.
Right.
Which we haven't done before. We've always just turned out.
I have a farmer friend, Jim Muck, who talked about when you're farming, he grew vegetable crops at the farmer's market. And he said by about September, you're just ready for it to have a hard freeze, have everything die, be able to sleep in on Saturday. And then about November, you have farmer amnesia. You forget how tired you were in September.
Yeah, I know.
And you can't wait to get started again, right?
Yeah.
I think that's true in sheep and cattle.
No, it's a true story. Well, we recorded last year. We recorded a couple of podcasts, and one of them I said I need to go back and re-listen to, and I listened to the one, and I was super excited for lambing. So I don't know if it was the right one. There's another one called 5,000 Lambs Later, and that one might be the one I need to listen to.
You should probably listen to that one.
Yeah, and see what I'm in for. But yeah, it's gonna be fun.
So. You've still got sheep and lambs in the feedlot too. While you're lambing,
right?
Yeah,
no,
so
that's all the rest of the business is working. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So somebody else kind of covering that while you're dealing with lambing.
We got 12 loads of cattle going out in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks. We got lambs on feed. There's like 11,000 lambs on feed right now.
Wow.
Irrigated pastures cranking. We got lambs in from our friends at Silver Creek and David Little.
Yeah,
got some of those in pasture and. We're turning over. We got one piece of irrigated pasture. I need to take you out there and look at it. But we're turning over because there's like this, I don't know what, it's like a water grass, like a miniature tule thing.
Yeah.
And it kind of took over a big chunk of the field. And so we're disking it under. But that ground is so hard. I mean, it's been so hard and so difficult to break that top surface.
Yeah.
And that's been quite a challenge. I think we finally cracked it. Into this, so here maybe a couple days ago, we're going to spread some compost, let the ground rest a little bit.
What are you going to plant it to?
I think we're going to do a barley, ryegrass, and clover mix.
Okay.
And the hope is to get the barley up before the geese come in.
Kind of a nurse crop.
Yeah, that way we have some heights to it, and it keeps the geese from digging everything out by the roots.
Yeah.
I mean, it would really suck.
I just learned on our way down that one of the big subdivisions by us got a depredation permit to get rid of all their geese on their lake.
Oh, wow. That's great.
And they all flew to irrigated pasture. I've had 50, 60 geese in my pasture now since they had that depredation.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So,
that's only 60. We had like 800,000 or something last year on our pasture. It was unreal.
I think 25 geese equals one cow in terms of forage consumption.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we had last year, there was multiple gaggles, and it was pretty unreal. Like, you'd have 50 acres and it would be solid white, solid geese.
Wow.
And they would come in and just eat it down to concrete. And then when they'd leave, it would be nothing but bird crap, feathers, and dead birds. And not because they were shot. They were just
too many birds.
There's a lot of birds, and they die. You know, you get that many, you're going to have one or two die of old age or whatever.
Wow.
I mean, it was rank. And
that's
it took
brutal.
Our pastures there at Brown Road, it probably took them an extra 45 days to actually start producing versus the stuff further north.
Oh, in a year like
north.
This in particular where things are slow to come on, that's just, that's brutal.
The bulls are kind of coming out here. It'll be good. Hey, little gate needs to be open a little bit more.
We might
this is called Sunday morning quarterbacking.
Yeah, we're
going to
get out of site here.
Oh, so I would have opened that gate over there. You got to open it more. And then a little to the left. Oh, now they got it. Mighty fine work, Joe. Do you ride horses, Dan?
Not lately, but yes. Not like that.
No.
How about you?
Never.
Got a mule you could come ride.
I rode some like really old, exhausted horses on a beach in Mexico one time. And then I was up in Salt Lake City with the Oscarthorpes, and they had a trail ride we did. That was really fun.
How about that was fun?
Yeah, I really liked it.
But that was really fun.
It's amazing
fun.
How, like, I mean, even I consider myself slightly better than the average urban Joe as far as animal, like, instincts and, like, reading animals. But it's amazing how, like, I don't ever ride horses. I don't know what's going on with them most of the time. But, like, you get on one and you ride it, and you can communicate with them pretty easy. Like, if you know animals, you can, you know, that's a good step one,
and
I guess.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And there's a odd feeling of being up that high. You see the world differently.
Oh, yeah, super tall.
You interact with other people differently. If they're on the ground, you're much superior to the people on the ground.
Yeah, and it's kind of tiring. Too, like the bouncing. I'm a big guy, so you kind of jiggle.
You're not supposed to bounce. No bouncing. No bouncing. We'll have to get you Velcro for your saddle.
You got
to
roll like this. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, loading bulls.
Yeah, I think.
Are you taking your bulls home today?
No, Joe's going to deliver them.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, he says he's delivering them for free, but I think it's built into the price.
So is
just
lunch.
Like that free lunch.
So is lunch.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's all built in. I don't think he's running a charity here. But anyway, yeah. Well, Dan, it's good to
catch
good
up.
To talk
nice
to you.
To
good
it.
To see you. Good in person,
in
too.
In person, yep.
And yeah, you guys gotta get with Rosie and come down to Lamb and Camp. We'll broadcast live.
We'll make a date in October. And
yes, sir. Absolutely.
Live, the world premiere live broadcast.
Yeah.
Can we do that?
Why not?
Can we do it
no,
live?
No, we can't live. There's no internet out there. We do it at Goose Haven, but that place is no fun. It's
busy. We could have the audience come.
Yeah, right? That'd be great.
You guys just all show up at Lamb Camp.
That would work excellent. I'll just take the day off. Yeah.
Well, it's not a busy time of year. I don't see
not
why you need
all.
To worry about it.
Not at all. Good stuff. Well, one thing I want to say hello and shout out to Annika Austin, who is a fan of the podcast and has been wondering when our episodes are coming out the day after a new episode comes out.
So
she actually had five lambs born.
Oh, she had
a litter.
A litter. She had
wow.
a litter.
Wow.
What kind of sheep was it? You know,
they're show lambs, so they're all Suffolk.
That's pretty good for Suffolk.
Yeah. Did the mom count to five?
I think so. They're all doing good.
That's fantastic.
Wow.
That's amazing. You know, our first lambs I let out of the barn today, it was a triplet.
Really?
Gorgeous triplet. Crossbred triplets,
and
yeah.
Mom's taking
mom's
care
great.
Of all
yeah,
them.
The white-faced triplets I'm going to make twins.
Yeah.
But the crossbred ones are gorgeous.
Cool.
Yeah, they're really neat.
Very
we let
cool.
out that triplet and four twins today, so... Yeah.
It started.
It's going. We're rolling.
It started. Will you have trouble getting on alfalfa this early?
Maybe. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to worry about it, though. We'll make it work. I'll just tell Justin, figure it out.
That's kind of the answer to everything.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
Figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll roll with it. Yeah.
All right.
All right, man.
Sheep stuff you should know.
Catch you next time.
Thanks.
See ya.